Hey, gang, welcome back to King of the Ride podcast. As always, very excited to have you back. Welcome to the outdoor studio. Maybe you hear the birds chirping, the wind blowing in the trees overhead. We are in California. The season is in full speed ahead. And gosh, it feels good to be back at it, as much as it feels good to be outside. Our guest today is Tobin Ortenblad. That is Ortenblad with a D. Stand by for that a little bit later. Tobin is a long-standing fixture of the North American cycling scene. He's been at it for well more than a decade with some head-turning results along the way, especially early on in the cyclocross side of things. He took a U23 title along the way. He basically went an entire season undefeated. We've got a lot to talk about in the ever-changing state of domestic cycling across disciplines and, of course, the prolific rise of gravel. We'll talk about the HIT squad, of which he is a member. That's basically Santa Cruz's factory race team with he, Keegan Swenson, and Alexis Scarda. What it means to have teams in gravel. And especially because this conversation is face-to-face here in California between Levi's, Grand Fondo, and Sea Otter. It's a lively conversation. You just can't beat that in-person interaction. It is such a good one. I want to dive right into it. So here we go, right here, right now, with Tobin Ortenblad. There are a lot of bios out there, you know, you got like, I could visit probably Santa Cruz website and see your bio. You probably got one on SRAM. You probably got one from over the years on different teams, what have you. Do you know what your Twitter bio reads?
Ooh, I don't know what my Twitter bio currently reads. It might be aspiring Clydesdale racer. Yes.
Best bio I think I've ever read. How is that coming? How are your aspirations coming?
Dude, they're going backwards.
You're regressing from the aspiration?
Yeah, they're going down.
Bummer, man.
Which is not great because I do feel like I could be a winner in the Clydesdale category.
Yeah.
But also maybe not. Maybe I don't actually have the power for that.
What is there a distinct cat? Is it 200 pounds?
200 minimum. Yeah. That's like a featherweight Clydesdale.
Yeah. I mean, man. Like you've got some time in the cycling world, and so I feel like there was a very distinct time that Clydesdale category was a thing.
Yeah, it was.
It was what, mountain biking and cyclocross?
Yeah, like off-road racing, Clydesdale was totally a category.
Yeah,
and it wasn't like fat dudes. It was just big dudes,
right?
You know, like,
well, yeah, we suffer from. I mean, your teammate Keegan,
little guy,
extraordinarily fast. His legs are the size of my arms, and
they're
I don't
really
have big
small.
Arms.
Yeah, and they're just like. All muscle, no fat on the guy.
Correct.
I see the guy with his shirt off around the house, and I'm like, man, what am I doing wrong?
Emaciated.
Yeah.
So big dudes racing bikes.
Which, I mean, are you 6'3"?
I've never measured 6'3", but every time in the past, whatever decade, if you get a health screening, what do they call those things where you see
like
your doctor,
physical?
A physical. They'd always be like, oh, you're 6'2¾". Oh, you're 6'2½". So. I'm 6'2"-ish.
6'3".
6'3"-ish.
Round up.
But then it's funny because I'll meet people who I am distinctively taller than, and they're like, I'm 6'4". I'm like,
no, you're not.
No, you're not. Yeah. How tall are you?
6'1". That's probably the same
as
you.
That. Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ever actually clocked in at 6'1".
Yeah.
But like 6'5", or 7/8" even.
How close have you gotten to the Clydesdale category? And I'm not asking for your specific weight, but like, have you pushed the limits?
No, I've never been close. Okay. I'm usually 170 pounds, plus or minus 2 or 3.
All right. Yeah,
you know, I've never like.
Do
I think
some work.
I was like, one time after a trip with the national team on a road trip in Europe, I like went to Italy after and hung out with my friend for like a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wasn't having like a great time on the road trip and just eating a lot.
Yeah.
Because you're just bored and sad.
Uh-huh.
And I came from that trip, and I was like 178 pounds. I was like,
That's impressive.
That's a lot more than normal.
And was it a legit 178? Because there's also like, there's pure water weight, right? I mean, like you go to Italy, and that's just water, sponge, food. Everything's a carbohydrate.
It was
so that. You didn't just pee it out a day later?
It was like, I wasn't up at that weight for long. But I remember seeing his picture at a pool.
Yeah.
And I was like, you look like you're heavier than normal. And I know people would be like, roll their eyes, but you get so in tune with like 1 or 2 pounds when you're doing this whole thing.
Do I see this rib or not?
Exactly.
Do your nice jeans
fit or not? It disappears.
Yeah.
So I have a beard right now. Although one day I'll shave the beard, probably in a few weeks, and there'll still be an ugly chin underneath. Because you think you're going to have like this really nice jawline after.
Yeah.
And then it's just still not a nice chiseled jawline.
Yeah.
Just still kind of.
Do you ever cut the beard so it looks like to have the angular shape?
Oh, for sure. One of my friends called me out. He's like, you just undercut it. I'm like, well, yeah, you want it. And then you leave the front longer so it looks like you have a pointier.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's a good move. Yeah, every time I'm freshly shaven as of like 3 hours ago. And I don't grow prolific facial hair in the first place, but if I get a couple speckles, right, I'll be like, oh yeah, I look rugged. And then I look in the mirror, I'm like, oh no, I just look like I have a double chin.
Look, you're right.
It's like extra shadowing.
It's never good.
No.
And the shadows are not, it's not what you want.
No. All right. Speaking of social media, your nickname and in your handle is McTubbin. Now I could probably extrapolate your name, but not really. Where does McTubbin come from?
Well, when I started racing, I mean, I was like kind of a fat kid.
Okay. You could grow a beard.
Before I could all grow angular. A beard and disguise myself. I wasn't like a fat, fat kid, but I was like, there's actually some pictures where I was like, oh yeah, you were actually in elementary school, like kind of a big dog.
Yeah.
And then I started racing because before I raced, I just rode like downhill and dirt jumps, like nothing that was actually hard to do.
Okay.
And I started racing, and I was like kind of racing in high school stuff and wanted to be on Cal Giant Specialized really bad because I was like the big local awesome team.
Yeah.
And the mechanic on the team, who I don't know if you know, his name's Jordy Cortez. He works for Fox now.
Do not know that name.
He worked for Specialized. It was one of the mechanics, and he was the mechanic on Cal Giant too. And then maybe, do you know Sean Estes?
Sure.
Estes was also in the Specialized circle, and I would go on trips, and somehow I think Jordy just started calling me Tubbin.
Okay.
And then Sean at one point called me Mick Tubbin, and that one like really stuck. And then I just haven't. And then I made an Instagram that year, so I just embraced it, and now we're here.
Well, that was the follow up. Do you have to have McTubbin is spelled McTubbin.
Three B's.
I know. Are you bummed that there's a McTubbin pre-existing you on Instagram with two, and so you're McTubbin with three Bs?
I'm super bummed. Yeah. And it's funny because I think you probably looked, didn't you, to see if there's one with two Bs.
Of course I did.
Yeah,
and
that person, they don't use their Instagram.
Yeah, that's the worst.
Dude, I've messaged them. I've tried to follow them. Yeah. Like, I've tried to get in touch with this person, and like, I would literally buy the handle. Not for a lot, but I'd give you $200 to just give me the goddamn handle. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because like I've known you as McTubbin via social media, but it's never occurred to me there was three Bs. It wasn't until I had to double check it. I was like, what? Wait,
I think you just type it how you think it should be spelled with two Bs, and then like it just populates from like all the Instagram knowing who we are and what we do. And if you follow bike people, I pop up. But yeah, it's definitely a bummer. But at this point, it doesn't really matter.
It's funny because that was a thing for a while where like the what does it cost to have a URL? What does Nike.com cost? Like because people went out and just bought all those. Who would have thought the McTubbin would be worth upwards of $200 these days?
Who would have thought? $200.
Pro Cycling Stats. You're familiar? .com?
Kinda.
I consider it, I think it is where people go to get a wealth of knowledge purely on results, especially on the roadside.
Road results and cross results, I know those.
Okay.
And that's like kind of a New England-y thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so those are quite legit. I actually have no idea how they get their data so quick and so accurate.
Yep.
Because I'll have races from like non-USA races, like Bay Area Super Prestige, non-USAC races from like middle school or high school, like 2010. And I don't know where I'd find those results because those websites aren't necessarily even a thing anymore.
Sure.
But all those results are on crossresults or roadresults.com.
Bummer.
They have everything on there.
Crazy.
Which is really impressive. But I don't know Pro Cycling Stats as much.
I think my understanding, and maybe I'm totally wrong here, I think of it as very much a world tour categorization. People who are racing like European road racing. But then mysteriously, in doing some research on you, all of a sudden they have stuff like Low Gap, Grasshopper, BWR, Big Sugar, Leadville, Unbound, SBT. These are all listed in results.
See, where are they getting that data from?
Totally, exactly. What kind
impressive.
Of impressive? It is super impressive.
Because no one's going in there and like, I don't think there's a single person going and like looking at Low Gap, which is, if people aren't familiar, that's this Grasshopper Adventure Series. It's kind of a NorCal race series we have, but it's not like a huge steamboat type race or Unbound. It's big. There's big names that come to it, but
yeah, considering it basically started as admittedly 25 years ago, but it was a group ride.
Yeah.
And now there's results listed in this crazy website. So the point being, like, that's a wild cross section of contemporary bike racing.
Yeah.
Low Gap, Grasshopper, Big Sugar, Leadville, SBT. I pose it to you. Given all of those in this 2023 results window, what kind of bike racer are you?
Man, I feel like I'm kind of jack of all, master of none nowadays, to be honest. Like, I really like mountain bike racing the most. I like cyclocross the most. Cross is the most fun. It's the most dynamic. It's like you have to be really fit, but you also have to be really good at driving your bike. But cross is not as prominent as it once was and or popular.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a whole part of this conversation, so feel free to go deep there.
And being like you got to be a bit business-minded to make it nowadays, so that means I don't dislike racing gravel or anything, but it's more important to be doing well at those than it would be to like go win all the UCI cross races nowadays. But to kind of circle back to your question, like a Leadville, like race where we're actually racing a flat bar bike, I'm kind of digging those more lately, because even if like Leadville's not a very technical course, but there is still some bits where like you can gain an advantage by being a good bike handler.
Yep.
Because a lot of these gravel races are just horsepower. It's like not a lot of handling.
Yep.
There's a bit of handling here and there, and it's always nice because it makes a separation, but I just dig anything where you get to use, like, we have this, like, at least I feel like I and some maybe the other mountain bike guys have, like, a quiver of skills of, like, fitness, punch, handling, some tactics, and, like, races where you get to use that entire toolbox is really fun. Like, you're bike racing and using everything you have to, like, make it.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite. Because these gravel races, I just feel like you're using one or two of those, which is tactics and just power. There's never like bike handling to help make a separation.
Yeah.
I mean, Unbound last year, we had that mud,
which
was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Unless your derailleur snapped off. but like that was a rare example where like you needed some bike handling skills.
Yeah.
But we're seeing less and less of that right now, which I don't like, but I feel like fortunate to be able to do all these races regardless of handling or no handling.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is there a race that's currently on the calendar that you totally jive with? That you think, like, yes, it has an itty-bitty bit of everything?
I think Sea Otter.
Yep.
It's not a particularly technical mountain bike race.
Yeah.
But if you're not good at handling, you'll get gapped off.
Totally.
If you're not fit, you'll get gapped off. If you're not tactically apt, you'll...
Yep.
You know, there's a bit of everything in that race. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the Grand Prix, between the two, quote, well, I guess there's three, including Schwamigan, but Sea Otter and Leadville are the two Grand Prix mountain bike races, and mountain bikers are like, these aren't mountain bike races, and roadies are like, those are mountain bike races. What I point to is the results speak to mountain bikers do well at both of those.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's a very simplified mountain bike race. It doesn't have doesn't require a gargantuan amount of skills.
I don't think, though, that they do, like, I don't know, I don't want to, like, throw shade, but
yeah.
I don't think that mountain bikers necessarily, like, do better at those because it's mountain bikey. I think that it's that some of these guys do significantly worse.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, some of these guys line up for that race, and they're the big, fit guys, and they know they can't win.
Yeah.
Because they can't drive the bike well enough to be in the front.
Yeah.
Which has got to be a rough place mentally to go to those races at.
Yeah.
And like, for example, like, yeah, I mean, like there's a few guys that just like, you know, Pete and Griffin, for example, fit as hell, but they can't go as fast as like some of us on the mountain bike. and that's crucial at that race. So like, I almost feel like personally, I gain a few spots by knowing that they probably won't be up there. And I guess I'm more of like a dirt rider. So some of us gain some spots by those guys not being able to like have the skill to go fast in the dirt, you know?
Yep. And I'm not throwing shade at mountain bikers being mountain bikers and allow like that allows you to do that, because I also don't want purely to do a fitness test.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, okay, that's just going back to cutting weight and riding Zwift.
Yeah, exactly. So it's nice when it's just kind of like a holistic race. There's a bit of everything.
So
I did forget about Schwalm again too. That race.
What's that? I mean, that's like a drag race.
That's my favorite probably race on the schedule. It's 2 hours.
Yeah.
I always mess something up there and don't do well, but this is my year, dude, for Schwalm again.
Having never done it, I hear it's a drag race.
Yeah.
But it ends in a sprint. How much single track is there?
It's like 2 hours wide open. Yeah. There's only these small bits of single track. Not much single track.
But you can shed some roadies?
Kind of, but not really.
Yeah.
Like Pete does well there.
Sure.
And he actually was way underbiked the last few years and was on a pretty good setup.
Yep.
But it's almost like, for people that don't know, it's like imagine kind of a rolling forest with dense trees, and then someone just clear cut like a, I don't know, 20-foot section, maybe even 30 feet across, just clear cut it. So in the winter, they can cross country ski on it in a mass, like in a big group, and we race our bikes on it. So in the summer when we get there, it's mostly just grass with maybe like a burned in track down the middle. And it's usually a little wet. So you're just ripping through this rolling terrain in the woods. And then there will be pinch points where like single track comes up, which can be a bit decisive, but ultimately people will come back from that. And like last year, I went to the line with like 11 people.
Dang.
Yeah. I crashed at the start, so I wouldn't know anything about that. But
the rumor is
I overlapped wheels. Oh, there's a video Dylan Johnson has on there. It was pretty low point of bike racing.
Yeah.
Just since we usually kind of talk shit about people making stupid mistakes. And then like, I literally just wanted to like move around this guy, and I just got a little too antsy and moved right.
Too quick.
Too quick, and just overlapped and just like dead sailored, hit the ground, like picked myself up, and like bottles over here, glasses are crooked, CO2's there, gels are here. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, it's just a yard sale.
Yeah.
And then I get all that, get back on, jump on my bike. I'm in a massive gear and my bars are twisted. So I have to get back off my bike, straighten my bars, put in easier gear, and then just chase like hell. And yeah.
Oh, like, because That is part of the Grand Prix. You got the top whatever 30 dudes, and then it's still a mass event.
There's correct? Still a ton of people. Okay. Yeah, exactly. So like, it is a kind of a funny thing with the Grand Prix that I don't totally understand. Are you in the Grand Prix this year?
Negative.
Yeah. So neither am I. Which, whatever. I mean, being Keegan's teammate only gets you so far in life.
Yeah. Well, and don't worry. We're gonna riff on that for a bit.
I don't fully get why the Grand Prix needs to be like an exclusive roster.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it helps the promoters like keep tabs on people.
Mm-hmm.
But I also just feel like if you have, I don't know. So I think it's 35 riders in the Grand Prix.
I think so.
So, okay, you have 35 riders, and these 35 riders are going to make it to every Grand Prix event, which is six races, I think.
Seven races. You got to finish five.
So seven races, but I almost just feel like if you have people that'll show up to those seven events, why not just put them on the mass overall? And my only thought of why that would be a conflict for them is that some of these races have such like a tricky lottery to get into that you have to guarantee that your roster is into every race, because like Leadville can be hard to get into, Unbound. So that's the only reason I can think they do that.
I think that is it, and it's a significant one, because everybody can say, oh, I'm legit, I'm vying for the overall.
Totally.
But then all of a sudden that's many hundreds in a field that they can only allow so many people in. But I don't disagree.
Yeah. And they do have good stats on the riders. Like, you know, when you're in the Grand Prix, you give them some info, and they do a good job of like knowing who's who and what's what. They do a good job with that mostly. But
well, then who's Tobin Orton Blyana?
And then sometimes they spell your name wrong. It's your chance to shine.
Yeah, you have this wonderful IG post that talks about Tobin Orton Bland, and we should point out that that is not your last name.
People really botch it. I just feel like it's just spelled there. It's not even, just pronounce it as you were taught in grade school,
yeah,
and you'll get through the last name just fine.
Yeah. And so perhaps it's this Tobin Orton bland character who has taken your spot in the Grand Prix, implying to me that you did get in, you raced it in 2023, is that right?
That is
and
true.
And so bummer that, you know, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but bummer you didn't get in 2024.
Yeah.
How let down were you?
I was like, not when I didn't get in, because I did apply and I put, you know, time and thought into my application.
Yep.
I mean, dude, I'm not going to lie. Like, most of it's just ego. I was like, oh, ow. Like,
yeah, who are these other 34 people?
Yeah, like, there's some names on there that I don't know, but it doesn't mean they're not good at all. And maybe it's not the popularity contest it once was at the first iteration of it all.
Maybe they looked up your social media and looked up a McTominay
with
only two B's and got the wrong guy.
So, yeah, I mean, I didn't get in, and initially I was like, well, whatever. Like,
yeah,
I enjoy some of those races, but I don't enjoy all of those races. So, like, here's my chance to go do some other cool stuff. And then, yeah, we got the thing is nowadays, as you know, and most people do, like, there's so many cool bike races to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's just not enough time.
Accurate.
Yeah, like, there's so many sick races.
And furthermore, if you're going to do the Grand Prix, you have to dedicate yourself, A, to that, and B, to the preparation to it. You don't half-ass altitude races.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, it takes a wild commitment.
Like, early in the year is, like, your kind of only chance to kind of mess around and do some other stuff. Mm-hmm. Because after Sea Otter, you have 1 or 2 weeks where you could maybe do something, but then you got to train for Unbound, mm-hmm. which is, like, huge volume.
Mm-hmm.
Then you rest into Unbound. You can't do anything else. Then you do Unbound. Then you're just in the hole for 2 weeks after Unbound. So, like, Unbound is awesome. I'm glad that the USA has the biggest gravel race still in the world.
Sure.
But the prep and recovery is, like, it's like a 7-week commitment, I think, to do well at that race, of like 7 weeks of all in for one race, which is hard to do for the average person.
Cool. Average person, yeah. It's hard for the people who are dedicated.
And the people who are still, like, all in, it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, man, cool. Like, I won't do Unbound. I can do these other cool races. Well, maybe these guys will just be, like, super tired after two. I can, like, check some, you know, beat some guys that normally maybe I couldn't beat.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the team's like, yeah, no, I think it'd be good for you to be there for
Keegan
at that one. I was like, okay.
Fair.
And then I was kind of like, I don't know how I felt about it. I was like, man, that was the hardest race I've ever done. Hardest thing I've ever done on a bike.
How many have you done?
Only one.
2023?
Yeah. It was really hard.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
But then, like, I saw, like, Van Avermaet's going, like, some big legit Euro guys are going.
Totally.
And I was like, dude, it's actually, like, a privilege to be able to do that race.
Fair.
So now that mindset, I'm like, well, I'm all in again. I'll hit the training block and I'm fully committed to try to do well.
Nice.
And or help Keegan in whatever capacity Keegan needs, but I need to be fit for that. So yeah, that was a positive mental shift I've had recently. Like, you get to do this.
Yep.
Like, I know tons of people that can't even get into the lottery that would like to do it.
Right,
so, you know.
So, bigger picture on the calendar year, how do you go about picking your calendar for 2024 in addition to what are the events you're doing?
Well,
and or what are the events you're not doing?
Perhaps? Yeah. Like, I'm not doing, it is pretty much the lifetime races, to be honest, which, yep. I mean, like, I'd like to do some other events, but, like, the whole team doesn't really go to those.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like spending time with my team. Like, we have a good time together.
Nice.
We're all friends. King's one of my closest friends. We have a good time. We eat well. Myron, our mechanic, is a good cook. Mm-hmm. He, like, enjoys cooking every night. And you know, we have Alexis on the team too. So we're all in an Airbnb generally. And just, we have a good time together versus, like, if I choose, like, some one-off random races, like, I'm probably going alone and just doing, like, that thing, which I've done a lot of that in my career, like, working out of the minivan or whatever.
Sure.
It's just, it's a different vibe. It's not, it's kind of lonely.
Yeah.
So the roster or the schedule for this year is pretty much like lifetime races with some local races in there too.
Local road race.
I love racing local road races.
Heck yeah.
Santa Cruz doesn't love to hear this, but, like, God, I love racing road at home because Norco has a really strong racing scene.
It does, and especially on the national scene, in which so many races are just gone.
Like, yeah.
There's some rad history.
Yeah, there's some really big races that have been around for, like, 40, 50 years. Like, there's this one race that they put your name on the trophy every year, and, like,
nice.
Le Mans name's on that trophy.
Yeah.
Cats Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's pretty legit. So yeah, it's pretty lucky that I can like race road every weekend at home if I want to. But that's not like my main focus. Usually those are just training.
Sure.
And you do want to win. Like I've said that before and people are like, ouch. And I'm like, well, no, it's not like a slight at the race. It's just like with such a big schedule of other burly things, you have to like, you know, it is if you are targeting a race, you have to like rest into it. And the days you're resting, you're not gaining fitness necessarily.
Right.
So, yeah, anyways, a lot of local road. There's some good gravel stuff at home too. Like there'll be the Grasshopper series. Mm-hmm. Lost and Found is in the Sierra. Mm-hmm. And then there's another Grasshopper that is part of the Gravel Earth series this year.
You're kidding.
Which is like 2 weeks before Unbound, maybe 3 weeks.
No way.
So I will try and do that one.
Is that new? Is it a new Grasshopper itself?
It's like in, it's, I think it's near Ukiah, which okay. is where we did one. The low gap race is there.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming it's going to be a different course and probably sure. longer.
Yep.
But it's part of the Earth series, which is a pretty big series.
Yeah.
And that's cool that that's like in my backyard.
Totally.
To go do that. And then, yeah, I won't do Crusher this year. I think that's a stupid race. It's such a dumb race.
I love Burke, who created it. He and I were teammates a long, long time ago. That race is so flipping hard. Like,
altitude.
You should basically say, if you don't, I don't, yeah.
Like,
you it's just, extraordinarily hard.
It's incredibly difficult. And if for people that don't know, this race has significantly more climbing than descending in it.
Yes, the shape of the profile is an N. You climb, you descend, and you climb.
Yeah.
So capital N.
And it finishes at 10,000 feet.
Oh, and then you climb twice, I guess. So it's like an end that the last point is super high.
Yeah. So it's a point to point. You climb up a mountain, descend the back of the mountain, climb back up that descent. And then once you get back to that kind of out and back point at the top of the mountain where you could go back to where you started, you make a right turn, then finish up at the top of a ski hill.
At altitude, wildly dry.
And it's, yeah, it's super high. It's dry. It's in Beaver, Utah. It's one of those races where it's like the shitty Best Western just jacks rates to like $400 mm-hmm. a night. There's nothing in the town. Mm-hmm. They know that people have to sleep somewhere, which housing rates at these lifetime races, that's a whole different podcast.
Like it is.
These people in Kansas are paying their mortgage for the year.
A couple months mortgage. No lie. Well, yeah, we're going to go off topic, but completely on topic. We're going out 2 weeks from, well, basically 2 weeks prior to Unbound.
Yeah.
And it's funny to look at Airbnb because everything's wildly vacant and cheap as, but then it's also beginning the mixture of people charging $2,000 per night.
Yeah.
So literally ours is $75 a night
yeah.
next to a place that's charging $2,000 a night.
Yeah. And you know, part of me is like, God, you like you people. And then at the same time, like, you know what? Good for them.
Genius.
I would do the same thing.
Oh, completely.
Yeah. So
completely.
So anyways, yeah, no Crusher in the Tusher. I'll go do Downeyville that weekend,
sick.
Which is a real mountain bike race.
That's the 2 days, one bike.
Yeah. Yeah. Like so Downeyville, for people also don't know, it's a 2 day race. It's an all mountain race. So day one is like you climb, it's a cross country race.
Yeah.
Climb up to the top, descend back into town. And then Sunday is just a downhill. So you get dropped off the top and it's a 45, 50 minute downhill run.
Burly.
Yeah. Same bike.
Well, a typical downhill is like 3 minutes. So
like a real world cup downhill. It's pedally. There's some climbs in it.
That's bananas.
Yeah. So it's 45 minutes, 50 minutes wide open.
Yeah.
They weigh your bike both days. Can't clock in at a different weight. They'll make minor notes like tires in the pro field, who's running what tires.
Yeah.
And if you show up on different or your bike has a different weight, you better have like the tire with a slice in it to show them with it. Yeah, because they'll like call you out on it.
I love it.
Yeah, so it keeps people honest.
Yeah.
And that is, yeah, that's Downeyville.
What kind of travel will you race on?
So we'll race cross country bikes. We'll race the blurs and then we'll just like slack them out a bit and put 120 fork on it instead of like a 110. And then the rear has 115 mil travel.
Sick.
And then but you're racing and like, it's really rocky. It's burly.
Yeah.
Like,
so you're perfectly happy to have a big tire on.
You want a big tire. Yeah. We raced 2 4s. We raced last year we raced a recon in the front in a recon race. And the recon race is a cross country tire. And the recon's like border line in the front. It's somewhat burly. Most people will run a heavier tire setup than that.
But
when you're balancing, you know, pedaling speed with trying not to flat, you kind of need to hang it out a bit on the tire choice. So that race is really fun. It's a good vibe afterwards. Everyone hangs out. There's a nice river in town. It's beautiful.
What's the town that you race from?
You're in Downeyville to finish and you start in Sierra City for the cross country day. And this is all off of Highway 49, like in the Sierra Buttes.
Is it original Grinduro territory? It's up there, right?
Kind of. Grinduro is also like kind of in that area.
Yeah.
And Lawson found that other gravel race I was talking about is also out there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just rocky and rugged.
Right.
So that'll be a fun, different race. But unfortunately, my teammates won't be there, so I'll be kind of solo. But all the Santa Cruz guys will be there, so it'll be
nice. No shortage of mountain bike
people
talent
to hang out with.
Airbnbs to crash in.
Yeah, exactly. And then after that, we'll see kind of what the schedule does. I think we'll go to like Gravel Nats is one that's not on. You were there last year.
Yep.
Yeah. Gravel Nationals will be a non kind of lifetime event. Mm-hmm.
How about come fall? Will you do any cyclocross?
Man, I want to. I did last year, but last year was the first year I committed to like a full-on gravel schedule.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, I was burnt out at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I wasn't burnt out on like the gravel thing. It wasn't a physical, or it wasn't a mental burnout. It was just physical. Like, I'm like, I don't have much more to give to training right now. Mm-hmm. And last season I knew that there's state champs at home. So I'm like, well, I should show up to that. And I'm like, and there's, well, I got to go to one UCI weekend cause I have points.
Oh,
and
no
just,
way.
I just got to, yeah. I'm like, you got to go to one UCI weekend.
Just to maintain it.
Just to at least have one point in case you want to do some racing next year. Cause if you start a cross race with no points and you got to start in 60th, 70th DFL. Place, it's like really hard to get up there.
Sure.
And then after, so I did, actually the UCI weekend was my last weekend of racing last year. The week before that was cyclocross single speed world championships, which were in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And I'd be lying if I wasn't like fully committed to try to win that race. I think that was like...
Is that the one you need to get a tattoo if you win?
Yeah.
What's the acronym?
SSCXWC.
Yes.
So... Yeah, I mean, there was a handful of guys that really wanted that race. Like Lance Haidt was there.
Yep.
Kerry Warner came out. And the Kerry one was funny because I'm like, dude, come out. I'll pick you up at the airport. I'll put you up at my house. Like, come hang. It'll be sick. And then I was like, dude, why are you making it easier for this other really good cross racer to beat you at your hometown race? But yeah, we had a really good time.
Who won it?
I did end up winning.
Attaboy. You got
sweet.
Tattooed. Let's see it. Let's see her. Oh, nice. Does the crab have a name?
It's the Rock Lobster.
The Rock Lobster.
So Rock Lobster is like a local frame builder.
Yeah.
His name's Paul Sadoff. Mm-hmm. And his team like put on the race. And they did a really good job. And so the Rock Lobster is like their, it's the name, it's the bike brand.
Yeah.
And it's like, I guess technically it's a brand. Like I went to get the tattoo. I was like, damn, guys, you're going to make me get like a brand. Like that's kind of...
like. A hot iron brand?
No, like
you're saying,
like
the
it's
brand,
like a, the tattoo is of like a logo.
Right.
But yeah, it's not like some corporate ass logo. But
they
like,
didn't have to do the trademark note afterwards.
Yeah, I just thought like I saw like I was friends with the guys putting the race on, and there was kind of a flash sheet of different tattoos. So a flash for people who don't know, it'd be like there's six different designs. Or if you go into a tattoo shop, the wall has what's called flash on it.
Okay.
So you could like pick one off the wall.
Yeah.
That's like a flash sheet. And I saw like a flash sheet of like six different tattoos. There was like the shark one, this other TV one, like a bunch of weird ones. And I was like, oh, that, the shark's cool. Mm-hmm. And I showed up to the tattoo shop that night after the race. And they just had the like Rock Lobsters ready to go. I was like, I wanted something else. And I was never even supposed to see the flash sheet. It was just like.
Got it.
Yeah. So anyways. Not disappointed. My mom is though. So, yeah, what are you gonna do?
I take it that's your first tattoo.
No, it's not. But it's
I was gonna say you're well versed in flashing.
Yeah.
Okay.
She knew like my mom was at the race. You know, everyone, my whole family was there, and like my mom was like, "You won," and then she was like, "Oh, you won."
I was like, "Go get second, honey."
Yeah. My biggest regret of single speed worlds actually was not because it was like we had a tattoo down the street from like the after party bar, and my biggest regret is not like when you get your tattoo, they have like a stencil that they transfer, like an ink transfer onto your skin, and then they tattoo on that. Mm-hmm. My biggest regret is not having like an extra one made and like stenciled fake onto my neck.
Oh my gosh!
And then showed up with like. A fake one on the neck.
That would be.
I think my mom would have passed out.
Amazing.
It would have been. And then just, never show it all the way, but kind of let people see it and see next time. But also, I don't think it's a race you want to win twice. diminishing returns on the tattoo. Adam Craig would say otherwise, but... Yep.
Well, yeah, I was thinking when you had the six that you could have theoretically chosen from, sort of, and you liked the shark, like, what if you could have the tattoo you wanted, but in a place you don't want? Like, what if you had to get the shark on your forehead?
Mm. Go back to the rock lobster. Yeah, the rock yeah. And the tattoo is not in a prominent location. It's on, like, the back of my, on my hamstring area.
Yeah.
Those that
you're
going
to be wearing some short jorts to have that.
One day someone will see it.
So you and I were in Turkey, Texas, or just outside, and we were hanging out in the same house leading up to Valley of Tears Gravel, and we got into a serious game of name games from over the years. I mean, with your time at Cal Giant Strawberries and just a lot of the folks that we know. And, you know, like, I like thinking of all the people that we have seen in our lifetime in the cycling world, of which there are a lot of them. And it had me thinking of your time in the sport. I've got a handful of years on you. What is your introduction to cycling? Like, when do you get into it? How do you ultimately get to this pro gravel world in which you live?
Yeah, it's been a strange, like, I don't know, journey, for lack of a better word. Like, I mean, I've told this story a million times. Like, I never raced when I was little. I always rode bikes. You know, I learned how to ride a bike when I was five, and then I got a P3, so the dirt jumper, when I was in middle school or something. And then my neighbor down the street was a good bike rider. He was sponsored by Specialized at first, and then he was on the Yeti World Cup, like, downhill program.
Is this in Santa Cruz?
This is in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
So I kind of grew up chasing him around. He's friends with, like, a bunch of the guys that are kind of getting a bit older in, like, the dirt jump scene now, but, like, Greg Watts, for example, was also in Santa Cruz. Cam McCall, man, who else? Like, Paul Bassagoda one day. I remember just, like, these guys I'd see in these movies called New World Disorder. If anyone remembers those, these are, like, the free ride movies. One a year, there's 10 of them. So I grew up doing jumps, like, dirt jumping, chasing the neighbors around. They'd take me to, like, post office jumps, all these cool areas we had to go jump. But I never wanted to, like, pedal. And we also had these cool mountain bike trails. And every once in a while, my mom would, like, drop me and my dad off towards the top, and we'd just ride home. It's all downhill.
Yeah.
And I had nice bikes. I had, like, my neighbors hand me down Yetis at the time, which were, like, top tier bikes. But I just didn't want to pedal my bike. Just jumps. I just jumped. That's
gravity,
what I did.
Baby. Gravity.
Yeah. So then in let's see, eighth grade in middle school, I was aware that there was, like, a high school mountain bike league, which is NICA. And I knew that the high school had a team. And then I also know in middle school, there's this thing called contract PE. So if you were on a sports team, you could get out of PE in your, like, school schedule, as long as you had, like, a coach that would sign off that you were doing your training.
Beginning,
like,
in middle school, they'd allow that?
Yeah.
Sweet.
So in middle school, I, like, totally gamed the system, and I had contract PE, and I was riding with the high school mountain bike team. And I was like, dude, what a hack. You're just, like, you're going to get to go.
Yeah.
Just jump with the team. Just chill. It's going to be sick. And then I don't have to go to this class. I get out of school early.
Yeah.
Every day. And so I showed up to practice on the first day, and they're, like, doing hill repeats. And I'm in, like, baggies on my Yeti 4 Cross. And, like, I'm like, oh, dude, this is completely backfired. This sucks.
Yeah.
But I was really competitive, too.
Was it weird being a middle schooler hanging out with these high school kids?
Like, kind of, but not terribly, because they're all, some of them were, like, cool. Some were just, like, nerdy bike people.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't, like, terribly intimidating, but I just remember, like, wanting to win. I'm like, you should win these hill repeats. But I was, like, getting third. I was like, oh. But I was very competitive, so I started racing in eighth grade. I was racing, like, in my dad's old bikes. My dad had Santa Cruz's. So I raced, like, his Heckler, it was called back in the day, 26-inch wheels. Don't know how much travel it had, but that was my first racing, and that was down in Fort Ord, which is where Sea Otter is. That's where the local racing series was.
Yeah.
And then went through high school. Well, eighth grade, we started racing cross-country, and then the mountain bike team continued to train all year and did cyclocross in the winter. And so I never won a mountain bike race in eighth grade. I would always get second best case scenario to this one guy. I just couldn't beat him.
And were you racing other eighth graders? Or were you racing high school kids?
I was racing, like, at this point, I wasn't in NICA. This is just, like, the local series.
Got it.
Should have clarified that. And I couldn't beat this one kid in eighth grade. I'd never won. And then we did cyclocross in the winter, and I won my first race. And mm-hmm. I was like, this is it. Cyclocross is for me.
Yeah.
So I really started to like cross. And in the ninth grade, then I could race the high school mountain bike series. I did that as a freshman. I think I won the first race, and they bumped me up to like junior varsity, which is like what the juniors in high school would race. And then in sophomore, I was just in varsity.
Yeah.
And there's like a bunch of like legit dudes that race that, Nielsen Paulus was in the series with us. Nielsen was funny. I don't know if you listened to your podcast or not, but Nielsen could like, he would never make the front group in Nika. Like he was the first dangler, but
no
he would
way.
Never be in the front group. I remember, I had jokes on us now, but yeah. Man, who else was there? There's some guys now that were really good, but none of the men necessarily like stuck with it and went like pro.
Sure.
Nielsen did. I hope I'm not forgetting anyone.
So what? Blevins is a handful of years younger than you.
Blevins is much younger than I am. Kate Courtney was same age. She did the women. She was dominant there.
Yeah.
But anyways, ninth grade racing cross country and cyclocross, doing both, racing cyclocross for the local bike shop that still kind of supports me. And then around like that time, we also started a team, Bear Development Team.
That's right.
We started in, I think I was 10th grade. This local dude at the bike shop was there one day. His name's Stu Bone. And we just hit it off. He's like, we should start a team. And I'm like, well, I don't know how that works, but I have a bunch of friends who like to race, so maybe that could be the team. And he's like, I'll get us bike sponsor. And then
did he have a history in the creation of teams? Like, did he have any idea what he was doing?
Or not really.
The like, blind leading the blind.
Yeah, he had friends in like Marin that had ran teams. Like he knew people that were like high up in cycling.
Yeah.
Dude was just ambitious. So that was started in like 10th grade.
Do you still receive the Bear Devo emails?
Yeah, I read them all.
It's wild. Like you've created an institution.
Yeah, it's legit.
Arguably the best development mountain bike program in the country.
Yeah, it is the team, which is cool. And a lot of that is like Julia Violich came over from Whole Athlete and took the reins and, you know, had the like knowledge to have to financially back the team too.
She's like, let's make not a 10th grader run the team.
Yeah.
And we'll figure this out.
And like, when we started the team, I literally just like got the roster together, which were all my friends. And then Stu was like, I know, you know, these guys in LA got Rita bikes and I kind of know them. So we'll race Rita. Then I know some Castelli guys. So all of a sudden we had like a pretty legit little get up.
So wild.
And I raced road on that team. But I was always eyeing this other big team in NorCal called Cal Giant Specialized. Mm-hmm. It was based in Santa Cruz or Watsonville, the neighboring town, and that was a national level. It wasn't technically a professional team, but because no one was getting like a salary. Some guys I think were getting paid a bit.
Yeah.
But pro. We had three different cars. Volvo sponsored the team, so we had the nicest Volvos. We had the nicest S-Works Specialized, everything, Zip Wheels, SRAM Red, like legit.
I love how those teams exist, and they often exist much longer than, quote, real pro teams.
Yeah.
Like Fiorda Fruta in the day in New England, that was it. Mike's Bikes, I think, is it now, right?
Bikes is it, and they're doing a good job.
Yeah, long, long standing teams.
But yeah, some of these teams, the Cal Giant was around forever. So in ninth grade, 10th grade, whenever that was, I was like, that's the team. I want to be on that team. Mm-hmm. Like, that's got the best equipment, the best riders. And that was my goal. So I knew on the road, I had to be a Cat 1. And then for cross, I was just like, I'm just going to do as well as I can at as many races. Like, I'm emailing the team manager, like, newspaper clippings. Like, I'm just like, anything. Just being annoying as hell. And then junior year, I'm sitting in class in high school after probably just emailing the manager some other bullshit he didn't really care about. And he was like, can you go race in Louisville, which is part of the U.S. Grand Prix of cyclocross?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, dude, I'd love to. And he just emailed me a plane ticket. I haven't even talked to my parents yet. But I'm like, well, I'm not going to talk to my parents. I'll just send the guy the info. He needs to book me a ticket. And he booked me a ticket. And I got home like, hey, can I go to this race? Like this USGP UCI cross race. And
like that weekend?
Yeah, maybe like the next week or something. And they're like, and I was like, this is it. This is like the opportunity. So then I went to that race. And I was like second and third.
Dang.
So I was pretty much, or maybe I was fourth and second, but I was top five both days with guys that are still in it, like Curtis White was there.
Yep.
Beat him both days. Oh, Curtis, boy. I know you're listening. maybe only one day, but I think Logan Owen won both days.
Yeah.
And which these guys are still in it. Yeah. So at that point, then I was, after performing well, they flew me to the rest of the races. And around junior year of high school, I was like on the team. And then I was also brought onto the road team. I had my Cat 1 at the right time.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're getting a bit long here. Anyways.
No, this is great.
Throughout high school, always raced mountain bikes, cross, and road. And gravel wasn't really a thing.
Oh, sure.
And then I think it was maybe like the first year I was out of high school in like 2014. This race called Lost and Found in the Sierra Nevadas was a race. And my coach at the time, Chris McGovern, lived in that area. And he's like, well, there's this other race up here. Like, maybe you should do that. So I did that. And I think I was like, I didn't do very well that first year. And then the second year I did it and I won that year. And I was like, oh, this thing's kind of cool. Then that must have been like 2014, 2015. And I think I beat Ben Burden there that year. Beat him and won.
This is a Belgian.
Yeah.
Who became an expat every fall.
Yeah. To race cross in the States. And then, come 2016, I have graduated from Cal Giant. I'm off the U23 program. I've aged out, and the team has merged with Action. So the team is basically merged. It's not just the Cal Giant it once was. It's now like Cal Giant Action.
That's right.
Hoggins Berman Mega Team.
And Bissell was in there, too.
Yes. And there's probably the... I know that...
Crazy.
I think that merger of three teams into one superpower was pretty bad for U.S. development because all of a sudden there were fewer teams to develop. You know, it was very feasible that you would sign a pro contract off of Cal Giant. Like, I had talked to, like, Mountain Khakis. Mm-hmm. Remember that team?
Mm-hmm. And, oh, totally.
Talked to Jonas Carney one or two times about riding for... Rally. It wasn't called Rally then. So I was like, or Optum it was.
Yep.
So I was like, man, maybe I could sign on a pro road team. Like this is, there's options here. But anyways, Cal Giant merged, wasn't around anymore. I was aged out of the U23 program anyways. So 2016, I guess, is the first year of like me just kind of being alone, not having like a for sure program to race for. And in 2016 is when I signed with Santa Cruz. And I had been talking to Santa Cruz the year before because they had a cross bike coming out. And they're like, hey, dude, do you want to race this bike? And I was still on Cal Giant. I didn't have a signed contract or anything. But I was like, yeah, I'll talk to you guys about racing for you. And I was telling Keaton, I was like laughing so hard because I showed up to the first meeting. I don't really know anyone there. I just have some friends that work there. Mm-hmm. And I showed up with like a button down shirt, tucked in shirt, leather belt, nice shoes.
Yeah.
I'm pitching these guys.
Yeah.
And we go to lunch and everyone's just in like, it's just Santa Cruz bikes. You know, we're all dirt balls, like t-shirts and jeans and Vans. And I was like, God, I look like I'm way overdressed.
You're like, I'm actually a local guy.
Dude, I know. I'm just like, you look like such a tool. And I'm meeting with like the CEOs there and like the marketing dudes there, like the big dogs are there. And I'm just like, here's the deal. I need like two cross bikes and I need like a van at these races.
Yeah.
I wasn't even asking for a salary or anything. I'm like this. And they're like, oh, well, we were like, they just didn't understand like how the scope of really where I wanted to be with it all. And that was 2015. So I was still in Cal Giant that year and I finished the year with Cal Giant. Then in 2016, I did sign with Santa Cruz. It was like very small. It was like bikes, and I think it was like a 12 grand lump sum. Like, here's 12 G's, go race, you know?
And was it go race cross? Go race whatever you
want?
It
was like mostly four cross. Yeah. And then they'd be at a few other races like Downeyville and whatnot where like if I rolled up, they'd like pay for my, they'd put you up and everything. And that was 2016, and that year was my first year elite racing cross, and I was still all in for the full UCI schedule.
Yeah.
I was like starting to have some promise that year, a lot of top fives. I think I won four races that year. And then the next year, 2017, was like the year that kind of defined, I'd say, my career. Like I won every race that year. It was insane. Like I think I won 12 UCI races that year. And yeah, like I would line up with Jeremy Powers and Stephen Hyde and all these like big dogs, Danny Summerhill, and I was like, I'm just gonna beat your guys' ass in the sprint. I'm just gonna sit here and wait, and I would just beat them in the sprint every time.
Yeah.
And they couldn't. There's nothing they could do, because like they couldn't drop me out of the group. Yeah. Like I was just dying, like just living on a prayer the whole race. And then once it was like last bell lap, I was like, you just won.
Y'all are in trouble.
And then I would just wait and snipe in like the last corner, just wait for a drag race sprint. And man, it was so easy that year.
Yeah.
And then,
crazy.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Cause that's also the heyday. Like those are some hitters.
It was the end of the heyday. Yep. Yeah. Trebon maybe was retired already then, but mm-hmm. Driscoll was still around. Yep. Powers, Stephen Hyde, Curtis White, like everyone was there. And then 2018, I wanted to come into that cross season like even better. I wanted to win every race, not 70%.
Not just hanging on for the prayer, but
yeah, I didn't want it to be sprints. I just wanted to kill people.
Yeah.
And I had a hard time that year. Like I wasn't performing. I tried to get really lean that summer and I lost power. It wasn't actually good. And I was just struggling because I had this like, it was the weight of like past results, like being like, you need to be this guy again. And I wasn't doing it. I really struggled that year. Mentally was hard. So that was 20.
And you're independent at this point, right?
Independent. I'm sponsored by Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
And Donkey Label that year, which is a small clothing company out of Minneapolis. Those were my big backers.
Mm-hmm.
And Bell Helmets. Those are the three that were just kind of, that's how I was doing it.
Yeah.
And, my mechanic and I would rent a minivan.
Yeah.
And we would drive to the race. And if it was dumping and shitty and rainy, we just had the minivan.
Yeah.
And we would race bikes. And all of those years, like success or no success, we were just in the minivan. And we'd stay with host families because it was cheap. I'm paying for all this out of my pocket.
Right.
Whatever I save is my quote salary. Mm-hmm. Might be $6,000, you know?
Yeah.
I'd email ahead to like, I knew at a certain point when I was on Cal Giant, I knew the next year I was going to be alone because they were going to merge. So I, you know, made sure to keep the host family's contacts and I would hit them up and they're like, oh yeah, we'd love to have you back. So I stayed with host families because it was cheap. And then two, it's nice to have a house.
Yeah.
And
hotels are a little bit sterile.
Yeah. Hotels suck. So you're staying with families and it's like, you see the same families every year. It's nice. I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like emailing ahead. I'm like, hey, do you know anyone that has like some rollers or anything? Cause I'm trying to find rollers always to warm up on and just scrapping by.
Yeah.
We did that 2016, 17, 18, 19, and then the winter of 2020 would have been COVID time.
Yes.
Correct, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
because it was
March
spring. 2020.
So, 2017, had the banger cross season. 2018, kind of couldn't get out of my own way. Broke my collarbone at the end of that, so didn't even go to Nationals. 2019, was kind of coming back in. Had, like, a few wins, a few podiums, and then 2020... COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I switched coaches at the beginning of it, like the month COVID happened. I was like, new coach, like we're going to do this. And then COVID shut everything down. Like most people, I had no idea how long it was going to last because COVID hit, I think shutdown was like March of 2020.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'm like, oh, well, it sucks to be a mountain biker or a roadie because those guys are going to miss their entire year of racing. Meanwhile, I'm like, cross is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm training like hell. I'm like, you're going to get ahead. You're going to come in so fit, just training.
Yeah.
First cross season's weekend's canceled. The next weekend's canceled. The next week, you're just like, oh no, it's all going to be canceled too.
Trouble.
And then at the same time, the sports marketing person at Santa Cruz changed to who it currently is. His name is Jordan.
Okay.
Jordan at the time had asked me about like, you know, what kind of racing I did, what I liked, what I like to do, some of this, some of that. He's like, man, I want to make like an endurance team. And I was like, dude, that's cool. And I'm like, I'm kind of been your endurance guy for a while. So like,
can I be on the team?
Yeah. Like I'm on the team, right? He's like, yeah, we want you to be a part of it. And I was like, all right, cool, cool. And then, Keegan, his girlfriend, Sophia's family is kind of from my neck of the woods. So Keegan was actually in town for like Christmas or something. And Jordan, the manager at Santa Cruz, is like, hey, do you think like Keegan would be interested And at the time, Keegan and I just know each other from, like, we've raced a bit together, but we're not super close friends or anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, while you're here, like, I don't know what your contract deal is, but would you want to meet with Santa Cruz?
So you're riding Pivot?
Yes. Up yeah, for Stan's...
Stan's No Tubes.
Shimano or something? Sure. So Keegan's contract was actually up that year, and they signed Keegan for 2021. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in that first season of, like, the Hit Squad, we did, like, FKTs because there wasn't racing yet, so we're just trying to go do things. Totally. And then we did some pro XCT racing. Keegan was still trying to go to the Olympics that year, so we were chasing UCI points on mountain bikes.
Jeez.
And then he didn't get the spot. Blevins got it. And then in 2022, yeah, it was, like, the beginning of the Grand Prix. Yeah, and Keegan signed up and got into that. And then all of a sudden, it was just, like, Keegan found his calling, which is just, like, big, nasty endurance racing. Uh-huh. I get to be on this team with, like, the dopest equipment, the best support, no longer scrapping by on, like, my own budget. They're like, here's your paycheck.
Yeah.
The rest of it's covered. And that's kind of where we are now. And I've slowly, you know, every year I've done less and less cross and more of this other stuff. And I really miss cyclocross. Like, I really miss it.
Yeah.
But it's just, like, not a way to make a living in the sport right now. And it pains me to say that, but, like, I don't know. I had a moment of, like, comfort watching the Tony Hawk documentary. Yeah. I don't know if you watched that.
I haven't. What network is it on?
Oh, man, I forget. Maybe, like, one HBO. Or it's on one of them. The Tony Hawk documentary, there's this point in it. Tony Hawk's a legend, right? Where he's like, you know, I was skating and I was having a hard time, like, paying the bills. Skating just wasn't cool.
Yep.
And then got cool again.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. And he made millions, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, these things are just cyclical. Like, cross is not it right now.
Totally.
But it was it. Mm-hmm. Could be it in the future. But, like, mm-hmm. gravel's it right now. So just, like, you know, I don't hate racing gravel. Right. I like it. So just, like, it's fun to be doing something new, and it's feasible and sustainable for the time being. So, like, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, it was funny. Great story.
Thank
you.
That's the quickest way I could get through it all.
Truncated. Yeah. I recently had Michael Vandenham on the podcast, and I've raced, realistically, probably 20 cross races, which sounds like a lot because I feel like my knee jerk is like two cross races.
How old are you?
41.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, 20 with that long of a career is like, that's maybe one or two races a year.
Yeah. Right? Well, and I did it. I mean, that's exactly what I would do. I probably did it beginning in like 2011. Through the next 3 or 4 years, I would race Gloucester.
You're in New England, so yeah, there's the great sickest races are in New England.
I acquired a few UCI points and then went out to Vegas, and my points had not accrued because there's like an accrual period where you have to wait for the next first race. It was just ridiculous.
Like after
thing.
The World Cup,
yeah.
The first World Cup, then your points populate.
Yes.
Such bullshit.
It was so dumb. Anyway, my story is not intentionally about me. It's about Vandenham. And yeah, I love cross. I love following it. I'm not in any way a cyclocross racer. And he talks about, we're at this certainly low point for cross in North America.
Yeah.
And he was saying it's a passion project for he and Curtis, for example. And he's like lamenting that the best cross racers, your name came up, are not racing cross. He's like, yeah, it's sort of just a bummer.
It is a bummer. I wish too that there was like a marketing model and a financial model that if we're just talking like non-emotional, mm-hmm. like numbers, like I've been able to race a bit across on like the dregs of the budget.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, there's like $3,000 left. Like if you want to go race cross, go, you know, have fun. Like we can fly to some races, but yeah, it's just, it's not what it was.
Well, there's the meme. Mountain biking is the spirit of gravel. I think cyclocross is the spirit of gravel.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think.
It's so efficient.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's family friendly. It's local.
It's like spectator. Well, gravel's not a spectator sport.
Gravel's not a spectator sport. And a 200-mile race is not welcoming to Joe Schmo. And
no, dude.
Like, we've professionalized it so much. I think cyclocross, and my hope is more people get... I mean, to your point, it's cyclical. It'll be back. It'll be popular at some point.
And I have a theory that everyone has... Like, if gravel bikes are the hot ticket right now, the only difference between a gravel bike and a cross bike is just tire size.
Yes.
I mean, to oversimplify it. like everyone has gravel bikes, just like, you know, put a 35 mil smaller tire on it, and then come race. And yeah, cross, I remember this season I was like had a rude awakening when I got back to like 33 millimeters tubulars, and I was like, dude, these are dicey.
Tiny.
I ride this size tire on my road bike now.
Yep.
And you want me to like go fast on these. And they're tubulars, so if you push too hard, they can come off. So you really got to be delicate with them.
And there's a UCI governing body that'll tell you that you can't go wider.
Yeah.
It's no different. I don't think there's a width requirement in road cycling.
No.
I don't think so. But, like, yeah, realistically, I wish people were racing Roubaix on 38s or 35s. Yeah. It's like, we went to 32s.
Yeah.
Come on, y'all.
You know it'd be faster. You can do it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Switching gears, you talked about SSCXWD.
WC.
Sorry, yep. You got SBT GRVL.
Mm-hmm.
You got BWR.
Mm-hmm.
You got your team.
Yeah.
HTSQD.
Yeah, dude, no vowels.
What happened to the vowels?
The vowels? Vowels aren't cool. Look at the new Trek team. They're a little behind.
Trek?
The Drifters.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the Drifters.
I thought it was Driftless. Well, whatever.
It is Driftless. We're going to call them the Drifters.
Okay, the Drifters.
Just a bunch of, you know.
Turk.
A bunch of Drifters brought together. Turk, the Turk Drifters.
Yeah, it's funny how much the consonants have cannibalized the vowels.
Yeah.
So, goodbye vowels. The question is about Hit Squad. And you've talked about it. I mean, the questions were like, what does the team consist of? Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about you, Keegan, Alexis. Those are the three riding members, correct?
Yep, that's just three of us.
And is it just plus mechanic, or how many folks do you have back at HQ? I mean, you talked about a lot of folks at Santa Cruz Marketing looking after you.
Yeah, so it's a factory endurance team. Okay. We're not called like Santa Cruz Factory, but it is a factory team. Mm-hmm. Santa Cruz owns the team. Santa Cruz decides the kit. You know, if you want to be on the kit, like, you pay Santa Cruz, and that money goes into our team budget. That's mm-hmm. kind of how it all works. So, yeah, we have, when we travel for racing, we have our mechanic, Myron. Myron also ends up in the feed zones, too. Mm-hmm. And then on, like, the marketing side of Santa Cruz, we have Jordan is, like, our sports marketing manager, director. I forget his exact title. He's more now doing, like, contracts, like the big kind of more important stuff,
not just handling the Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. So Jordan's more doing that, and he was like around the team a ton in the early days because, you know, he kind of made the team, and now he is a bit more involved with the Santa Cruz Syndicate, which is the downhill program.
What's his last name?
Nguyen. Nguyen.
I was going to guess,
like,
that
the Vietnamese.
Okay.
Nguyen.
Very good.
Jordan is doing like the contracts, that stuff. And then Sam Rendazzo is like our second set of hands at races. He will drive the van to Kansas. He'll be in the feed zones. If, you know, you need something from HQ, Sam's the one who's shipping it to you. Uh-huh. He's the one that, like, if I need something, I'll go over there and pick it up from Sam. So Sam's like boots on ground in the building. Jordan's like doing the paperwork, the signing, the budgets, but also like in Europe a lot with Syndicate.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, like at the races, the team, Myron, and if we're lucky, Sam's there. For like the really big races, Sam is there because you need two people in feed zones, or there's two feed zones, or whatever it is. So it's like four of us, sometimes five, is like the whole squad.
There is a different Jordan. Say the last name again. Nguyen.
Nguyen. Yeah.
Of the same spelling. Also of California, but he's a... before you dive too deep into the internet, there are two out there. So also add Santa Cruz if you happen to be looking for this person. How do you feel about teams in gravel?
I think it's cool. I don't necessarily want it to be like road racing,
mm-hmm.
like where there's, you know, 8-man squads per se, but I think like having like teams is cool. It's a different dynamic. It adds to like the tactical aspect of it. I think Keegan and I have like a particularly good setup because if you get like the new Trek team, let's say you got Russ and Toby, They're mm-hmm. both good. Mm-hmm. They're both really good. Mm-hmm. Who's the top dog? You know what I mean? Like, on our team, it's like, duh, it's Keegan. Like, whatever Keegan needs, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather I'd rather sacrifice my race and still get Santa Cruz the win than, like, Keegan has to fix a flat, gets fifth, and then I get 15th. You know? It's better that, like, I get 30th and Keegan wins. Uh-huh. And then there's times where, like, I can help him be in position. I mean, mostly, like, I'm not there for as long as I should be all the time. That's something I'd like to change this year, but that's a different story. But I mean, early on, it's just like literally like giving Keegan a wheel. Like when we start these races, you know, it can be like 200 people.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, maybe it's more. And like, not sound elitist, but like out of these huge group, there's not like there's people that haven't raced, rode in a big pack. It can be a little sketchy.
Sure.
So like, if I just got to take the wind for Keegan to be out of like the bullshit, mm-hmm. I'll do that. That's my job. Mm-hmm. And then you still get people that are like, they'll see same jerseys and like, I'll see people back there trying to take the wheel from Keegan. I'm just like, no.
Yeah.
Like,
do you see what's happening here?
That's his wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every once in a while, it's funny too. Like, the women and men start together sometimes and we're all mixed up. And then you'll get people like throwing elbows with the women and you're like, well, I get that you want that wheel. But, like, don't push the girl. But also, I want that wheel too. So you're like, it's such a weird area where you're like, I'll be aggressive as hell with any dude. If I want the wheel, you just take it.
Sure.
I mean, don't be a dick, but like, sometimes it's like the girl's on the wheel you want and you're just like,
yeah, like, I won't steal that one.
I won't steal that one.
More delicate.
But I'd like to have that position. But anyways, the teams in gravel are, I think, like, massive teams would be kind of like, I don't know if I'd like that, but like these ones, twos, threes, it's cool. It's a different dynamic. It's different cards people can play. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's what we've been doing. So obviously I don't hate it.
Don't bite the hand that feeds you.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. I mean, in thinking of the event we have going on tomorrow, Levi's Grand Fondo is admittedly 100% paved, but it's very much that of, it has those gravel dynamics.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a lot of privateers. It's a heck of a lot of one-offs. It's a heck of a lot of, it just has the exact same feel in short.
No follow cars.
Right.
There's feed zones that you don't have to stop, but you can't have like staff there.
Right. Very independent feel to the race.
Like, yeah.
You must be an independent.
Self-supported.
Yep.
I'm racing with a saddlebag, which I normally wouldn't do on a road race.
That has your tools?
Just tubes and like, okay, if I get a flat, because we're going to be way out in the middle of nowhere tomorrow.
Very so true.
Something to fix a flat. Mm-hmm.
And then you get a team, like Project Echelon is going to be here.
Yeah.
And who knows how the race unfolds? I'm not trying to get into the dynamics of that. Well, or I sort of am. It's like, maybe as opposed to a traditional gravel race where it's just always a diminishing front group,
yeah,
with rare exceptions of a few guys will go off the front, tomorrow has a greater chance of breakaways, so to speak. And then mm-hmm. like having, it'll change the dynamic if a Project Echelon's up the road, then the other three guys are not going to chase.
Yeah.
If you're up the road, then Keegan's not going to chase.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if with the beginning of teams, mm-hmm. if the inevitability is that ultimately we'll go down the road and it's all teams. And yeah. I have no idea if that's the case.
Like in gravel.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to like give an advantage away, but I'll just say it. Like in Texas, for example.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
The state of.
In Texas, at that race Turkey, Texas, Valley of Tears.
Yeah.
Keegan was up the road immediately. And I'm like, this is a moment where like these guys I'm with need to know, like, don't call Keegan a liar. He'll go. This will be the last time you see him. And I'm like, I'm well aware of that, and I can maybe make the bridge right now and just bleed out of my eyes and get there.
Yeah.
But I'm like, well, you don't need to do that.
Right.
Like, there's four guys here. They're going to start working. Uh-huh. And they just start working, and Keegan's up the road, and they didn't even ask me to pull through because they knew. Like, I'm not going to do it. And like, you know, at one point Brennan's like trying to be like, insane. He's like, dude, you know, it's better we catch him than like get it caught from behind. I'm like,
I see your point, but
not really. Yeah. No, like I'm screwed either way, dude. But yeah, so I mean, it is interesting. This being said, like circling back to racing road in NorCal, I also hate it a bit.
Yeah.
Because in home, we get Mike's Bikes, shows up with 8 riders.
Right.
And the like incentive to make it just like a hard last man standing race is there is no incentive for that because they put some dude in the break. The rest of the team doesn't do shit except for chase and kill.
Uh-huh.
And then like if I'm there and I don't make the break, like it's almost impossible to make the break because if you jump, everyone jumps.
Right.
If you're not in the break, you're in the group, and then you try to bridge or whatever, and same thing, everyone jumps, but then they don't pull through. And I don't want gravel to have that dynamic ever. Like, I like that gravel's just, it's hard.
I want it, yeah, you want it to be like a really just, hard group ride.
Just a hard-ass ride,
and everyone guys just hangs it all out there.
Exactly. Sure. I don't want that to happen, and I don't think that will happen. It could if big enough teams got involved, but there's enough people that are just solo that I don't think it'll ever happen.
I would conjecture that it will happen.
You think it will?
I think it will. And I think it'll happen slowly because a half dozen years ago, there was the team in the Midwest, and forgive me because I'm terrible with proper nouns and I forget who it was. It was, I think, Stan Snow Tubes team.
Okay.
And they, same thing. They would line up with like 6 dudes. And there was this great, my listener will be apologetic for hearing this again. I apologize for saying it again. They had a Velo News article titled, "Is This the Team Sky of Gravel Racing?" And they were practicing like wheel changes and feed zones efficiency and all sorts of funny stuff.
Really? Yeah. And
then the team went
totally
away.
I missed that. Okay.
And Matt Stevens was the strongest rider, and everybody knew that the whole team was working for Matt, and that was fine. And it basically is a non-issue as long as the rest of the team is not strong enough, because like there's a Darwinism, and the not strong will survive. But once it's a team of a handful of strong riders, then it's no longer the Wild West. It's like it's team dynamics.
Yeah.
And who knows if that'll happen. And hopefully, like, the ego stands in the way of people all wanting to be the top dog. And be like,
yeah.
I don't want to sign with the team because no idea. It's a thought experiment.
Yeah. And I mean, here's another thing with where we are is, like, the factory thing that, like, we have mm-hmm. with Hit Squad is the minority besides Trek. Most of these
and Specialized sort of does it.
And Specialized, like... But there's so many racers out there that are really good.
Yep.
That are just like on their kind of privateer, for lack of a better word, program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Lachlan's not a privateer. He's on like a world tour team, but
technically
does gravel. But,
yeah.
But then like Pete, Brandon Works, Lexi, Cole, you know,
Howes
are like people that come to mind as like individuals with their own, like, I think these guys are all making pretty good money. And they're all being paid by like sponsors individually,
mm-hmm.
but that sponsor that pays like one or two of them doesn't actually have the budget to like sign a team,
right?
Which is what keeps it special,
mm-hmm.
because I don't know right now. You know, it's no secret. Like the bike industry is not thriving right now. We're coming off COVID. It's like the market saturated. Maybe 2-3 more years, people are like, okay, time to refresh.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see that big money and see it kind of like come out of the...
They'll be like, let's start a cyclocross team.
Let's make a cyclocross team. And then that, I'm out. I'm done with...
No, that's a really valid point.
But yeah, I don't think we have the money right now mm-hmm. to have the gravel team happen. I think the industry is hurting a bit. And yeah, I mean, it's just not a secret.
Which is cool because it also keeps it homey. Like, you don't want... There's a limited number of people to have the position to be able to make it financially viable for the sponsor and the individual.
Yeah.
I mean, like, selfishly, it's kind of perfect. But, I think it will just continue to grow. And, of course, there's going to be cycles to gravel, too. And
yeah. So I'll be curious to see.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for now, the little ones and twos, it's a good setup.
Well, Tobin, Orton Bland, I'm going to abruptly... end this because we have a mandatory rider meeting in 10 minutes.
Oof.
And I got to go rally my family to go to it.
You're going to go to it.
It's mandatory.
I think it's virtual too, though.
It is virtual, but it says all Growler participants must be there in person. I would suggest you go.
Where is it?
In the town green where registration is. Have you gone to registration?
Yeah.
Okay, go back to there.
Did it really say in person?
Yeah.
It wouldn't say virtual.
It said it is virtual, and it says in many caps lock, bright, angry, font colored.
Yeah.
All Growler participants may go.
Well, why don't you just...
You tell me afterwards if I need to edit this part out.
Why don't you just go and let us know?
I'll let you know how it is.
Thanks for listening, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for sticking through to the end. I can attest that Tobin and Keegan did in fact make it to the mandatory rider meeting. I was actually going to razz him for not making it, but he was in fact there. Well done. He had a great race too at Levi's. Tobin attacked right from the gun, and he was in a two-person move for most of the day. You see, that allows Keegan to save some matches, not spend any time on the front until it is totally necessary. Basically, he gets a free ride for much of the day, and Keegan went on to win the race. Anyway, sorry for the abrupt ending. I think we were just starting to get into the good stuff, truth be told. So what are your thoughts on teams and gravel? I have mine, but I'm much more curious than yours. Send your comments to me. Send them via direct message on the various ways to connect with me on the internet. You could email me, heistedking@gmail.com. Let me know. That's it from here. That's all for now. Until next time, please enjoy the ride.